I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, in anticipation of the Spirit and Place event bearing the same name, we're going to talk about speaking truth to power. We're going to discuss the complexities of free speech in a changing world. My guests are Jane Henniger, Executive Director of the ACLU of Indiana, and Tatiana Rebell, activist and founder of the longest female-led spoken word show in Indianapolis. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today we're going to be talking about tomorrow's Spirit and Place event entitled Speaking Truth to Power. More broadly, we're going to be talking about the complexities of free speech in a changing world. If you want to join the conversation, and I would encourage you to do so because obviously that's the theme of today's show, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are one veteran of the program, Jane Henniger, who is executive director of the ACLU of Indiana, and a newcomer, Tatiana Rebell, who is an activist and founder of the longest-running female-led spoken word show in Indianapolis. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's good to have you here. I should do my standard disclosure here before somebody else points it out, that one time I had the position that Jane does now. I was executive director of the ACLU of Indiana.
Thank you for your service.
thank you. More than anything, we in a show like No Limits, we just try not to hold anything back from the audience so that they can make judgments. So talk to me first. Let's get the logistics. Talk to me about the event tomorrow, and then I think we want to talk about the larger subject, really, of free speech in this era. Jane?
Yeah, absolutely, because this is such a timely topic. We picked this topic in April, and we couldn't have imagined that it could get more topical, but it has. So we're really excited to have the conversation tomorrow night, 7 to 8:30 at the Toby Theater in the IMA, now called New Fields, which is at 4000 Michigan Road, 38th and Michigan Road. And we have an incredible panel having a conversation about the power of words and the costs to both the speaker and the listener of free speech, freedom of expression. Our panelists are Tatiana, who's just an incredible voice, speaking truth to power in all of her endeavors, and also Tamara Winfrey Harris, who is a writer, has a blog, has contributed to the New York Times and other other publications talking about the intersection of feminism, people of color, and sex and all those good things, gender roles. And then also from the ACLU National Office, Lee Rowland, who is a First Amendment attorney with us working across the country on these issues. So it'll be a great conversation, I think.
And is there a cost to attend?
Nope. It's free. It's free. If you have time, you can RSVP. You can go to our Facebook page. You can go to the Spirit and Place Facebook page. Find us, Speaking Truth to Power. We want people to come. And we've got sponsorship from Sun King Brewery, so you know what that means.
Yeah, it means that everyone's going to be in a much happier mood by the end of the evening.
Everyone's going to loosen to tongues, which is good for this kind of conversation.
Yeah. So, Tatiana, what do you plan to What points do you plan to make tomorrow night? You don't have to tell us all of them.
I won't tell all of them. For me, it's mostly just speaking truth to power has always resonated with me. Bayard Rustin is one of my lifelong heroes, mm-hmm. who's actually the man that coined the term. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be important to me just to showcase what truth is and then also dissect the idea of power and who actually has the power and who's setting the narratives that we embody and the narratives that we take in, and talking about what that looks like on in a position of power and then as from a position of a marginalized community, and bringing power to those that often are left out of the dialogue. So that's what I'm really excited to do.
We are talking about a Spirit and Place event called Speaking Truth to Power. It is tomorrow evening at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. If you want to join the conversation, more broadly, we're going to be talking about free speech and about speaking truth to power during this hour. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Marcia has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Marcia writes, Dear John Kroll, I'm listening to WFYI radio and just heard your promo for today's program. I would like to say that speaking truth to power is not enough. Those in power will never give up their power. If speaking truth to power is to be effective, it must be power and truth speaking to power. Appreciate your program, and I appreciate you having this discussion today. I'll give you the first crack at that, Tatiana.
I think one of the things that we also have to realize that people aren't ever going to give up their power, but if there's enough people speaking truth and enough people getting to be behind it, we can change the narrative. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to be important. If one person says something, it's not going to be heard. But if that one person is surrounded by other like-minded people that believe the same thing, that's when the true power and the pressure comes in from people to have to like advocate for change and advocate for policy work and advocate for those that actually have been silenced via power. So while it's not enough, it's the most important and I think the most powerful step that has to be taken to be able to get people in those positions of power and to be able to give people the opportunity to step outside of being silenced and to change the narrative and make what at one time was something that was seen as abnormal to change it into becoming something that is normal.
Yeah, and Jen, I was going to say that you know, at the risk of being sounding redundant, mm-hmm. power is dynamic, right? So, mm-hmm. so yes, we have a power distribution in our country. That doesn't mean we have to acquiesce to mm-hmm. to that distribution of power. People can cede power. People can seize power, and you know, one of the parts of the conversation I'm looking forward to tomorrow is getting these participants' thoughts on how do words, how do communication, ways in which we express ourselves, how does that work to change the dynamic? You know, how do we use art like Tatiana does? How do we use articles? How do we use legal arguments to challenge the existing status quo and try to shape it and change it.
How did you settle on the subject here of this theme? What was it that prompted you to think this was the time?
So, you know, you have to submit these things in April. And when Spirit and Place announced this theme, I think probably over a couple of years ago now, I thought this is a perfect theme for the ACLU. A lot of what we do in our work is challenging the exertion of power in a way that challenges people who are less powerful, right? Our work defending the individual rights of people in America is about giving power to seemingly less powerful people against a powerful government.
Or often disenfranchised people.
Right, right. Vulnerable in a variety of ways. Minorities mm-hmm. of one sector or another. And so I when thinking about what we would talk about within that, power context, I thought immediately of the adage, speaking truth to power. And then what does that mean for us? And you know, given the context of Spirit and Plays Festival, which is just an incredible platform upon which to talk about the intersection of art, religion, humanities within our community. And so I thought about how can we talk about freedom of expression and the ways that it makes it challenges power, but it also jeopardizes those who are already vulnerable. And so having an honest conversation about that cost of speech, this cost of expression, and a way of bringing thoughts, ideas to the light, but that exposure can often be painful to everyone that are then exposed to those ideas. And so how do we, painful to people who are power, who should be pained, mm-hmm. right? Whose authority should be challenged, but also painful to the people who have been victimized and made vulnerable.
And that's his, I think that was part of the point Tatiana was making earlier too. You mentioned Bayard Rustin. He absorbed some tremendously significant costs during the course of his life for attempting to tell the truth. I mean, in so many ways, he was marginalized, accused of being a communist and almost pushed out at times the civil rights movement, despite all of the things he'd done for it. Why is it, do you think, that we have such a hard time in our society first hearing and then accepting the truth tellers?
Well, I think personally, just as a society, the truth is just hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we go back to just like admitting of slavery and admitting of certain things, and it's one of those things that just in general in the context is just hard mm-hmm. for people to deal with. And oftentimes because there's so much hate and so much hurt involved in it, it's hard for people to get past because you have to sit in that uncomfortable place mm-hmm. to admit things that you probably don't want to admit about yourself or admit stuff just in general about history. And it gets hard. And we also, you know, as Jane said, we can't be blind to the idea that even speaking truth can be bring physical harm to people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a risk of being killed for being truthful about your sexuality. There's a risk of being killed for speaking out against the government. There's a risk of going to prison. There's things that we have to actually like honor. I think it's hard for people because that is a very uncomfortable conversation. And it's one that we aren't used to having. And it's something that we have to do to be able to get past it, to be able to get to a place where we can heal and then move to another zone of changing things. I think it's just hard for people because it does take them to that place where they have to admit parts of themselves that they probably don't want to, and also admit parts of history that are hard and painful. But it's also one of the things that are most necessary to be able to get to a point of movement and progression.
So. Jane, I'm going to throw the other end of that question to you. What are the costs of denial then when we refuse to acknowledge the truth or we refuse to honor and accept the truth teller?
I was thinking about one of those examples in reading a front page story of the New York Times today about sexual harassment. And the story was examining why there seems to be a flood of allegations and a reaction to that, repercussions perhaps. And it harkened back to a Ms. Magazine cover from 1977 that the cover story was about sexual harassment. And at that time, the stories were so uncomfortable for the public to hear that the cover were puppets. Mm-hmm. Showing a male and female puppet showing the interaction of sexual harassment. And even that was banned from supermarkets, many supermarkets, because it was too confrontational. It was too explicit. And, you know, that's a long time ago, 1977. Mm-hmm. These conversations take a lot of time.
Some ways because, it doesn't seem that long ago.
Because they're harmful. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's harmful for... those who are victims of sexual harassment, sexual violence. And so, you know, these stories are difficult to tell, and they bring discomfort to everyone, those in power and those who have been the subject of taking advantage of that power.
We are talking about Speaking Truth to Power. That's a Spirit and Place event tomorrow night. My guests are Jane Henniger, who is Executive Director of the ACLU of Indiana, and Tatiana Rebel, who is an activist and founder of the longest-running female-led spoken word show in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. When we come back, we're going to talk about the idea of truth itself being under assault. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Speaking Truth to Power. That is the title of a Spirit and Place event tomorrow night that will be at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I love this conversation, especially in light of the anniversary of our election of a year ago. I think it's very important to understand the power of words and speaking truth to power. I'm an activist in the city. I'm working a lot with redistricting reform. And there's a couple of things that I'm learning both in my volunteer life and my work life. The other side of conversations and the other side of speaking truth is listening. And we really have to learn how to listen deeply to the other, especially when we can't agree with that other perspective, and to be able to hear their truth, even though it may seem so foreign to us. And then there's also a spirituality to this. Eric Law is a Chinese American who's done a lot of work over many decades on diversity and multiculturalism, and he talks about the margin of grace, and that's where the powerful have to put down their power and the powerless have to take it up. I think Jane's comments even on the issues of sexual harassment and how those who feel powerless learn to take up their voice and their agency and find their power. And so I think that dance of the powerful and the powerless being together in this margin of grace is another way to sort of think about this. So I just wanted to offer those insights.
Thanks very much for the call, Debbie, and for taking part in the conversation. Tatiana.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things, listening is one of the hugest parts. One of the things that I do via my spoken word night is to make a point to centralize the marginalized and have a space for people to be able to actually speak their truth in a safe place, because I think it's hard just to be able to find just a safe space for everyone to be able to be fully true and honest with who they are. But it's also a time, and I recognize that, for other people that might not be able to, on a daily basis, become in contact with someone that has a lifestyle or lives a life or has a truth that's different than their own, to also just sit there and be present. I think it's hard for people to understand that sometimes, that just being present and listening is one of the most important things that you can do, to then be able to figure out. And if we take the time to actually centralize the most marginalized in whatever topic that is there, everyone will benefit from that. And that you don't actually have to fully understand where someone's coming from to be able to recognize that place. It's not just about like understanding. You don't have to fully understand a gay lifestyle to be able to know that gay rights should be a thing. You don't have to fully be able to understand what it's like to walk around as a person of color, but to be able to take the time to listen to that and acknowledge what they're saying and take that as the truth. That's how we get to a point where we'll be able to progress in society as a whole.
Yeah, there's a reason why these conversations come along with the notion of believing, you know, that you don't necessarily have to have lived in someone else's skin to believe them when they tell you what it's like to live mm-hmm. in their skin. And that's goes, but first you have to hear it, right? You have to listen. You got to be in the presence of those expressions, of the presence of hearing someone tell their own story. And that's something that we want to get to in this conversation tomorrow. I appreciate Debbie's question, and I appreciate your activism, Debbie. Thank you. One of the concerns is that we have heard that we need to listen to each other. If we're going to heal this divide, if we're going to go forward together as a country, as a people, yet we know that increasingly we're in our own silos. Mm-hmm. We listen to each other. I mean, we listen to our own within our own silo, whether it's our radio station or our groups of friends, or but you know, on the other hand, in those silos, we speak forcefully about our views, right? But when we're out in the general public, politics is one of the things that it's impolite to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. So we're reduced to talking about the weather when we're out in the open amongst each other. But you know, we've got to overcome that stigma that these conversations are too uncomfortable to be had in polite company. And we're a democracy, right? We only survive if we talk about the things that impact our common society, the public good. And so I really challenge people to abandon the notion that these topics are impolite, that sex, religion, politics are beyond our appropriate conversation. It's only if we discuss these topics, but we do it politely, right? I mean, it can still be a polite society, but that shouldn't remove these conversations from the public dialogue, because it's only by raising these issues amongst each other are we going to have that ability to listen.
I want to talk, and I want to frame this question fairly carefully, because it, you know, as someone who works in the business of attempting to verify things on a regular basis, one of the things that has struck me, and we see this in the discussion of, you know, fake news and all of that, is that critics take the point I think Tatiana made eloquently about your truth and translate that into meaning that truth itself is relative. That, you know, oh, okay, that's your truth. That's okay. It's not my truth. So I don't have to treat it with that kind of respect, which means at some level the whole idea of truth, of something being verifiable and therefore something that ultimately we could agree upon, is itself under assault. Would seem to me that makes the work of speaking truth to power all the more difficult, because some people aren't even recognizing at least what most of us consider the idea of truth to begin with. Tatiana?
Well, I think for me, one of the things we also have to recognize is, and that's where I come back to like the power in the whole thing and the narrative and who's giving the narrative. I don't want to hear the narrative of someone that's not living that existence and that's claiming that to be truth. I want to hear the truth of a person actually living that existence, and because that is the truth. And I think that's one of the problems, especially if we think about with like media and that kind of stuff. It's, whose truth are they actually telling and what angle and what lens are they coming from? I think we have to be very aware that if we're going to be listening to what the truth is, who's the person telling the truth and what will they benefit from that? I think we oftentimes lose sight that they're, you know, people are speaking for a market to make money, that people are often speaking to push their own agenda. And you have to be able to recognize that and figure out where they're coming from. The truth is all, like, it's always going to be the truth. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we have to be very aware of is who's saying it and why, and what they're actually trying to get out of it. I think we lose sight of that often. but I also don't want to lose sight that we also get to this place where it's right or wrong, mm-hmm. and who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. And oftentimes I think that has to be kind of left out of the narrative as well. It's like we can have open conversations about what truth is without trying to push our own agenda of what we think is correct or what we think is right. I think we have to acknowledge people from where they're coming from and listen to what they say, because that's the only way that we're going to get to any place of being able to like acknowledge what the truth is to move on past it.
Sure. Yeah, the we've got various ways of talking about these concepts, right? There's truth, there's facts, and you know and then there's opinions. You know, there's all of these sort of swirling around, and Tatiana's point about, you know, just because someone else defines truth in a certain way, that doesn't, they don't necessarily get to end the conversation. And certainly in the issue of narrative and story and history, you know, we've known for a long time that history, that the victors, you know, however you want to define that,
write the history.
Yeah. And you know, that doesn't mean that it should be definitive and unexamined. Quite the contrary, historians would say it should be continually examined based on evolving understandings, based on evolving facts that are uncovered. So you know, we have to let go of our preconceived notions, even of preconceived notions of what's the definition of truth and what's the definition. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully, you know, fact-based. But, you know, mm-hmm. Even that is, and the more that cognitive science challenges us on mm-hmm. our conceit that we're rational beings and that we all deal mm-hmm. with, we have a firm grasp on reality, we know that that's not necessarily true. And talking about how we get to listen to one another, social science also tells us that starting with contested facts, even if we're 99% sure that we have the most verifiable information, that starting there as a starting point kills a conversation, that we first need to find a common values and start there. And from there, then bring people, open people up so that they can hear our perspective on the facts and we can hear their perspective. And then we can go forward from there. Hopefully together.
Even though there's research out there right now that shows that, you know, verifiable facts, when people are confronted with them that contradict their beliefs, rather than encouraging them to change their minds, it actually solidifies
entrenches those
beliefs in ways that make the conversation you know, and that dynamic makes the whole idea of a discerning truth that much more difficult. But I would think, and I've been picking on Tatiana, so I'll start with Jane on this one. But also, I would think makes the idea, I mean, there's got to be a certain hopelessness in trying to speak the truth to someone who clearly has absolutely no interest in hearing it.
Yeah,
and all sorts of reasons to deny it.
Right. I mean, our evolving understanding of how we hear each other, how we don't hear each other, how facts turn that are all contrary to our paradigm that we've set up, continue to alienate us. That can be demoralizing, but I've always believed that information can never be a bad thing. So mm-hmm. I think that the more we understand ourselves, how we work as beings, how our brain works, how our emotions work, we just have to accept those for what they are and then go forward. And so I think that we stop with this, I'm going to beat you over the head with my set of facts until you cry uncle. We have to stop that, and we have to find a different way. We have to appeal to our common humanity, and which is also sometimes hard, because some of the times the words that are being said to us don't recognize the humanity, and that's been a challenge with these conflicts across the country between white nationalists and counter protesters, including people of color who are Jews and others who are very intentionally targeted by the hateful speech, and it doesn't recognize their humanity. So how do you start that dialogue based on shared values when there's no discernible shared values there?
Tatiana.
Well, I think there is a sense of hopelessness, but I also think that we have to acknowledge that maybe the point of conversation isn't to get someone to change their ideals, but maybe just to get you to be able to understand where I'm coming from and accept that. I think the understanding and the acceptance of another person as they are is way more important for me personally, especially just being a writer, is way more important than trying to get you to change your mind on what you think like a certain reality is. I think once we get past this idea of trying to change someone's mind, and if we all can sit at the table and then just talk about acceptance and what that looks like and understanding, I think that's like one of the hugest things that we can do to accomplish anything.
Is there a benefit, I'll stay with you, Tatiana, on this, in speaking truth to power, even if you know it's not going to be heard at some level? I mean, is there just a value in identifying?
Absolutely.
Do you get out of it?
Well, for me, one of the biggest, so when I started writing, it was to deal with like childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. And being able to like truthfully identify myself and the traumas that I have gone through. And then in my progression, just as an artist, it's also then when like coming out as a queer woman, just that acknowledgement of myself and being able to do that just for myself was huge. I think it isn't just about trying to get other people to accept you. It's also about learning how to accept yourself fully. And when we are able to be in spaces where we can fully be ourselves and honest with ourselves, I think for that, that just in itself just changes the dynamic of the society that we live in. Because that's where it kind of essentially for me, it all starts from. It starts from like the truth and acknowledgement of self and then moves into the acknowledging the truth in other people. Even if people don't want to hear what I say, and generally times with my form of art, I'm very in your face and very honest. Mm-hmm. And I want you to be uncomfortable, and that's my goal. But it's also, I want you to acknowledge why you're uncomfortable and then understand that that is what's necessary for you to get to a place to be able to accept things within yourself. That being truthful about who you are allows you to be in a space where no one will be able to take power away from you. And I think that's like the basis of everything that we just as like humans need to learn how to do.
Gotten an email from a listener named Jerry. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, in my experience, speaking truth to power is easy. The hard part is getting power to listen and respond appropriately. Individuals and small groups are readily ignored. Larger groups may risk suppression by authorities. Please discuss the protections offered by the ACLU and others to free artistic and political expression.
Yes, yeah, so the ACLU, our mission is confined to holding government accountable to the promises of the Constitution, which means that they protect the civil liberty of individuals vis-a-vis government. Government can't censor us. There's, I believe, that in the values of especially the First Amendment, strong protection of freedom of expression sends an aspirational, serves an aspirational purpose by demonstrating that it's a free exchange of ideas that will get us to a better understanding. And in that level, I just want to say that it's Tatiana's approach on this just demonstrates why art and artists are so important to this conversation. We lawyers fighting over the law are only going to get us so far, that it's essential to have artists who challenge and appeal to us at a deeper level.
We are talking about Speaking Truth to Power. That's the title of a Spirit and Place event tomorrow evening at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. My guests are Jane Henniger, Executive Director of the ACLU of Indiana, and Tatiana Rebel, an activist and founder of the longest-running female-led spoken word show in Indianapolis. You want to join the conversation? Find us on social media, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or call us at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. My guest today, as we talk about the upcoming Spirit and Place event entitled Speaking Truth to Power, it's an event tomorrow night at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. My guests are Jane Henniger, who is executive director of the ACLU of Indiana, and Tatiana Rebel, who is an activist and founder of the longest-running female-led spoken word show in Indianapolis. So we've been talking about this idea of the truth itself under assault and what we do when it hasn't been recognized or its validity is challenged or circumvented. I'd kind of like to talk about the consequences of that because, often the truth is about the only weapon the disenfranchised have at their disposal. And if that is not recognized or valued, then what happens to us? Both, why don't we start at the level as a country or a community, and from there drill down to what happens when, the truth is denied, an individual's truth is denied. What happens to the individual? Tatiana, I'll start with you.
Oh, man.
I know. We don't ask the easy questions here.
Well, I think we have to acknowledge in a place that we haven't actually really been very truthful, especially if we just think about issues of policing and we're not being very truthful in the fact that there's certain things that are done or even just in general to communities of color more so via hyper surveillance and that kind of stuff. But we don't talk about that truth and the fact that how people are portrayed is different than the actuality of how those people are. Mm-hmm. I think what we're at right now is the fact, because we're in such an area where lies have been kind of glorified, and people are starting to speak up, I think that's part of the reason why we're in the place that we're in, because we are coming out of a long history of lying. Mm-hmm. And we are, especially people, disenfranchised folks, are now like, no, it's time for us and for you to hear what we're having to say. And there's going to be pushback because we have gone so long in this area of being lied to and being okay and comfortable with the lie, and that status quo of lying has become truth to some people. Mm-hmm. And I think a reason why that we are is where we're at, because we have to acknowledge the truth and we have to get to that place. And I think that's the reason why it's so hard. Like, we are not going to be able, nothing is going to change if we don't actually change the narrative. And I think the narrative so long has been so based on telling the truth via just one lens, mm-hmm. that it's time for us to actually like step outside of what that lens looks like. And we're not going to get anywhere until we do that.
Okay.
Say that there's a reason why we have a First Amendment so prominently placed, so outsized in some ways in our list of individual rights. It was informing our democracy and maintaining our democracy, the ability to have access to information, as unmanipulated as possible. Information has been essential to retaining power for people. Now, that's only played out within the dynamic of our bigger society, mm-hmm. and there's, because of the relative power and powerlessness that those facts and access to information has played out in different ways. But it's that doesn't mean that we should abandon it. We should continue to fight for it. And, you know, we currently have an administration that's having assault, a very methodical assault on those very mechanisms with which we can even hope to hold power accountable, and assaults on the press and the mainstream media and vilification of that, assaults on things like political correctness, right? Mm-hmm. You know, labeling it nonsense and making it radioactive to even talk about. But when essentially one definition of political correctness is just people stopping the way that they've been thinking and talking, checking themselves for just a second to think, what I'm saying is, are my views, do they reflect some kind of bias that I perhaps have been either conscious of, but maybe in unconscious of, you know? So vilifying political correctness is another mechanism of freeing power from accountability. And I think it's essential that we recognize all of that and we fight back against it. And we say, you can't take away our voice. You can't undermine our sources of information. They're essential to us being able not only to hold government accountable, but for us to have a way of interacting amongst ourselves.
Yeah, and I'm going to apologize to the audience here. Normally, I don't express views during this broadcast, but that whole question of political correctness is one that, I think is a straw man, in that, at least the way I was raised, what we call political correctness used to be called manners, right, or courtesy, that you show consideration for the feelings of others, and all of that. And it also strikes me that there's an inherent contradiction in saying that you are offended at the idea that someone else has expressed offense at something you have said. Mm-hmm. If you reserve the right to be offended, they reserve the right to be offended, mm-hmm, as well. So let's talk, though, about the second part of this. And I'll start with Jane on this, because I have picked on Tatiana way too much during this. The whole piece of what it does, we've talked about it at a cultural level, but what it does is when you deny someone's truth, you're really denying them their voice, their worth, what that does to individuals who are denied in that way.
Right, right. And I will cede to Tatiana and our other panelists tomorrow night, conversationalists tomorrow night. Tamara has also talked about, written about this need to put, as Tatiana said, centralized, marginalized people. I will say that the challenges to the fact that some speech denies people's humanity reveals this the weakness, if you will, at some of our tried and true premises about free speech. Right. So we talked amongst ourselves when we were preparing for this about the marketplace for ideas, and which is a common way of defending the free speech, unfettered, free of censorship, let ideas compete. And there's been pushback that's a bad metaphor, because we know the marketplace in economic terms is not totally unregulated, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we account for the powerful cheating in our economic markets, and we try to regulate against that. Well, the same goes on in the marketplace of ideas. There's an imbalance of power, and some voices are stronger than others. Some voices have controlled the narrative for so long that they have great dominance by virtue of that. So, how do we take into account that this unfettered competition is not fair? It might be unfettered, but it's not unfettered. It's fettered by bias and history. So how do we unpack that, and how do we go forward without giving government mm-hmm. the ability to censor? I think it's a challenge for all of us, and I don't think we quite have the answer yet. I certainly don't.
Tatiana.
I think one of the things that we have to like really pay attention to, which I go back to, is the idea of the power. There is a reason why marginalized communities are being silenced. It's because it is a check of power. And there's a reason why certain groups are vilified for speaking truth and trying to make change, because it is a check on the power system. But we also have to recognize that, and I hope that more people would be willing to understand that when groups like Black Lives Matter groups are becoming vilified for trying to actually just work to be getting like equal rights or civil rights, depending mm-hmm. on how you look at it. And I think we have to be very aware of that, and also very aware of the danger that it is dangerous to speak truth in certain settings. But it's also one of the most important things that we have to do to be able to get to a point, because nothing is going to change unless we actually give these groups and these people that are in danger the support and the space to actually speak and exist. We all know that, especially coming from a marginalized place, that it is a dangerous. You mm-hmm. essentially have to out yourself, and you have to be okay with that. But I think it also goes back to the sense of community, that if we have enough people supporting other people that are trying to do that, we'll be able to get to like a certain place where the truth will be that all we need, as opposed to the acknowledging the sense of who's in power and who's not.
We are talking about Speaking Truth to Power. That's the title of a Spirit and Place event tomorrow night at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. If you want to join the conversation, please send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Greg has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Greg, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to really applaud you guys take on this subject, because it's a very sincere one, because most time what I've found is like some people have expressed themselves. It's really an art of communication, in that most of the time when we talk in terms of truth, or when I'm talking in terms of truth, it's meaning that it's about, let's say, a specific matter or a specific event. And what happens is, in the conversation, if the person who I'm trying to convey my truth to is not concerned about it, they manipulate the conversation and make it and create a confusion. And so therefore, or thereafter, it becomes more or less a frustrating or a conundrum, in that you're pretty much opposing each other's views, or You know, it just becomes one big mess, and no one really try to resolve it without someone saying, as I mentioned, someone mentioned earlier, you becoming confrontational. But I thought that was the whole, you know, that's one of the first rights. Well, one of our first rights is freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. And if you can't express yourself, how can you actually resolve a problem?
Good point, Greg. I'm going to let Jane take a crack at that. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, and thanks, Greg. And I think your question also gets to what Tatiana was talking about, that there can be, especially in art, an expression of power by telling stories that we've been told not to tell, that confrontational aspect of that can be a kind of power, and that exertion of power can be unsettling. It can be, and I think that's why you often see this defensiveness of people when they're being challenged in that way.
I think, and I want to sort of jump on this, too, because and reframe, Greg, the discussion ever so slightly because we're getting close on time here. But I'd also like to pick up on, is it possible for the truth ultimately to be collaborative or conciliatory? You know, one of the tenets of journalism, one of the reasons that we're all good journalists are supposed to go out and get as many different viewpoints as possible to put into a story, is this idea that if you get all of those voices speaking, something that might resemble a piece of a universal truth could possibly emerge from that process, that no one of us has the whole thing, that we all have to contribute if we're going to get to some larger understanding. Is that still a valid, and that also at some level was you know, the animating force behind the Enlightenment, which produced the the American Revolution. Tatiana.
Well, I mean, I think that's also one, the universal truth is pretty much what we're all trying to get at. And I think the reason why we're at the place that we're at is because we haven't been getting the universal truth. We've only been kind of getting this, like, narrative through this, like, white, cisgender, hetero narrative. And instead, it's time for us to start seeing the narrative of all the people that are around in society to get to that universal truth, to be able to get to that place where we're at. And I think it's very essential, but that also goes back to a little bit, it's also about listening. And that's a huge thing, and trying not to get I'm right, you're wrong, but listening to get to that shared place of the universal truth. I mean, one of the things that I've learned as an artist is oftentimes I thought that the things that I had that were happening in my life were just my own issues. And through sharing my story, I've been able to connect with other people and even people that I didn't think I could connect with. By sharing my truth, and people sharing their truth, they're able to connect with other people in some semblance of, like, finding what humanity is, like the basis of humanity, and connecting what our truths look like. I think, honestly, the universal truth is what we need to get after with all lenses, not just one lens in particular.
And what I hear you saying is that we probably ought to approach that task with perhaps a little more humility than we do.
Understanding, absolutely. I think humility is a great way to think of it. And I love your concept of a collective truth, because when you think about it, I mean, how artists work, right? They present their perspective, a perspective, right? And then that allows us to fill in more and more perspectives until we, you know, you see this microphone from one perspective, Tatiana from another, I from another. When we put them all together, then we get the truth about this microphone. And, you know, our experiences in the world bring us to each individual insight onto how we go through the world together.
We are just about out of time. So, Jane, real quickly, the event tomorrow night.
Speaking Truth to Power, 7 to 8:30, the Toby Theater at the IMA, now called Newfields, at 4000 Michigan Road at 38th and Michigan, and free.
Free to everyone. Well, I'd like to thank you both. This has been a
thank
very
you.
Provocative
thank you
conversation.
So much,
I'd like to thank my guests, Jane Henniger and Tatiana Rebel, for what has been a fascinating conversation. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.